Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson. And we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy.
Insane in the membrane.
Do I need my video on, Paul?
Well, yeah, can we use a bit of video? Would that be right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Okay, good. Yeah. There's a bit of background clutter, but...
It's all right, it looks rock and roll, that clutter.
It looks cool, mate. Morning, I like it. That. It looks like Kensington Market, 1989. I like that. Sorry about that. Are you all right? Good?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all right, man. Yeah.
Excellent, mate. Excellent. I always sit and wait until we've finished all the tweaking of the sound and everything. Because this booth is like, it's great, but you don't want to be locked in here for too long.
Yeah, it does look very small.
It's a bit small. How's it going? What's going on, Tom? What's happening, bruv?
Yeah, it's all happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, busy time, man. Busy time.
Good. I had to MC a punch up on, when was it? Friday? Yeah, I did the beer keller in Manchester. And I'm just getting started. I'm 3 minutes in. And you could feel it was already building up. There was a pressure between two tables. They were sort of like early to mid 30s, dress shirts, quite well to do, pissed up pricks. Bless you. They're already going off on one. They were annoying another table of blokes that were more my age and, you know, bald heads, you know, and Stone Island. And I was like, right, well, this is not going to go well, is it? I'm 2 minutes into my set and one of the lads just launched himself, Bruce Lee style, over the table and just lamped this other fella. And wow. The thing is, when a fight kicks off in a gig, it's not like the whole room goes like Wild West. It's like there's just a corner of it like moves, like starlings. It just kind of goes like that. And everyone's like, whoa. And I ended up getting the crowd to sing Close to You by the Carpenters while we waited for it to calm down. So wow. That was my week.
So was there security involved or?
They arrived. They were brilliant. They handled it. And then a load of high-vis security. So it's in the Printworks, which is like a massive kind of complex in the centre of Manchester.
Yeah.
And so they arrived. And then I'm stood there on stage, and then one of the managers, she arrived, sort of stood next to me, and she's like, what's happening? And I went, oh, babe, you've missed it all. Oh, I was like, good job these are benches and not chairs. It would have gone off. So
was this the Comedy Store gig?
It was, yeah.
Oh, man.
It was good fun.
I did it a few months ago, and it was just kind of, it was no tension at all. So it's quite weird to imagine that room suddenly full of coked up men just sort of egging each other on or whatever.
I think there's a pressure building between people. I think, and especially it's like we're into February now. I was talking about this the other day with my wife Kate, and we were both saying how fucking tricky it is at the minute. And so I think a lot of people are under a lot of pressure, and these things are going to start to happen a bit. I think not necessarily just in comedy gigs, but you see videos all the time of people just losing their shit in a coffee shop.
Yeah. I definitely have those moments where I'm like, oh, okay, is today the day where I finally do something public that I can't ever live down? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
always
yeah.
threatening, isn't it? If you just, as the tension builds, you're just praying and hoping that someone doesn't look at you funny that you think you can take. Do you know what I mean? Because most of the time, the things don't, the pieces don't join up where you're not only anxious, stressed, and angry, but then someone looks at you and you're like, do you know what? Let's do this. Let's fucking do
Let's
this.
Let's fucking dance. I've had, do you know what? So I've had one of those days today when I had loads to do, and we were out last night at a gig, and then and Kate and I sort of sat. We just had a nice time. We were working on her show. We were sitting on the sofa. We had a glass of red wine, and we were joking, and we came up with some new material. So we were buzzing from that, and we're like, right, we better go to bed. And I woke up at like 5 a.m. just panicking. I had this mad dream that all my teeth had fallen out while I was talking to Dave Vanian from The Damned.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, God. Because so that's obviously a stress dream. Dave Vanian being a big hero. Last thing I want to do is all my teeth fall out in front of him.
Yeah.
And so that happened. And so I woke up and I was like, I've got to go. So I was in the lounge for a bit, just laying on the sofa. Got back to bed, went to sleep. And then I was aware that the alarm was going to be going off at like 7. So I'm like, all right, get some kip. And I'm really trying. Went off eventually. Next thing I know, Kate's waking up going, we stepped through the alarm. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then you're up and you try not to be stressed. So you're like, I made breakfast for us and she's getting ready. And then I shove that stuff in my bags and be away for a few days. And then, but then you just, then you're aggy, aren't you? You're aggy. You're just in you. And you're like, it's just, and then I got to the studio, dropped a whole cup of coffee on the doorstep. So I had to clear that up. God. Got in, sat. And I'm just like, right, just pull yourself together. We're talking about booking people for the gig that we've got going on. Flicked open my phone and someone has shared something with someone from someone that I just don't want to fucking see right now. Oh. I'm like, you fucking fuck this universe, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those when the, how does the universe know?
Yeah. And you can, yeah. And it just builds and builds and you're walking through the day going, right, okay, the computer game is not on my side today. Every level, you're on a platform game and every level there's some new fucking monster coming at you that you don't know how to negotiate. I think I think that's a bit like when someone comes around your house and they've come from outside and they've got the weather all over their vibe. You know, they come home and they come in the room and they're like pink cheeks and their hair
smell like the weather.
Yeah, they've got a cold face when you give them a kiss and they're kind of agitated by the outside world. I feel like that's the emotional version of that is what you're talking about, you know, when you meet people and they're carrying the previous moment they were in or a lifetime of agitations or pains that they haven't quite processed. So they bring it into the room with them and you're like, oh, you're carrying a lot, aren't you? You're not really here with me. You're kind of like, you've still got all this shit in your system that you haven't found a way to shit out. And so it's just sort of sitting in your blood and you bring it into every conversation and every room you go into.
Yes. It's funny what we lug around. Speaking of which, we've got our back room, spare room in our flat, and it's just full of boxes. Boxes that I packed in 2014 when I moved from Greenwich to Charlton. And they were still in the back room when I lived there because I was going to have an office when I lived in Charlton. So it was all boxed up and ready to go in there.
Well, you are a grown-up, aren't you?
I was a grown-up, mate. And then that went tits up. So it ended up, the stuff stayed boxed until I moved to Crouch End and Bounds Green and then moved in with my now ex. And the stuff has stayed boxed that entire time for nearly a decade. And I just went through it the other day and I'm like, I don't need... There was like old... like Uncut and Mojo magazines with Oasis and Paul Weller on the front that I've lugged around since, I don't know when, since the early 2000s. I'm like, I don't need any of these. This has to go. This is old, Rich. And just, I got rid of it and it felt fucking amazing.
Yeah. It's weird collecting stuff, isn't it? Holding on to stuff. It's like, what are you waiting for? What's it gonna be? What's it for? Do you know what I mean? Am I gonna come back and just open up the magazines and look at the pictures? Sometimes you just want to hold on to stuff for longer.
Yeah.
Just because it somehow represents something or getting rid of it somehow feels symbolic or something. But actually the thing itself you don't actually spend any time with.
No, but it's the thing that it represents, like you just said, yeah. And I think I felt like, I think I was on like a John Peel kind of archive mission. I was like, you know, one day someone's going to go, oh, wow, look at all these things. And no one's going to do that.
I used to do this thing which my ex-girlfriend would hate, which was just, it seemed to be on a Sunday night. I'd sit on the floor. I'd open the drawer that I had for me at her house and take out all the things I had in it, put them all around me. Just look at them all and then put them back.
What was the thinking there? Was it like a comfort thing?
Yeah, just to be aware of what's mine, you know, just to count it all. Just to, you know, feel the presence of all my things, and then away they went. But I feel like as you get older as a man, I think particularly, you got to be careful of collecting things and being obsessed with the sort of having them. It's like that collector's pride, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, I've got the full set there. I've got all the damn vinyl, and I've got them on CD now as well, and I'm looking to collect all the albums I've already got on CD and vinyl, on tape as well.
Yeah.
And the mini discs. I've started a mini disc collection of interviews with the Damn, which I already have as well. So I've got, that's what the upstairs loft is for, and I'm archiving that at the moment. So me and my wife aren't making love much at this time. There isn't time to make love, Sandy. I'm archiving.
I've got a day of archiving, babes.
Yeah. I don't know what it's, I don't know why I'm doing it, but it makes me feel calm.
I think there's a, it might go back to sort of legacy. You know, you read stories in the news and they go, well, this guy died and we went into his house and we found all this stuff, and it's, and you go, that, again, that's not going to happen. They're going to just throw it all away.
He wasn't a man of substance, but he was a man of stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's an older thing as well. You start, like you've just said, like what is important, what isn't. So my vinyl, very important. That's never going anywhere. But things like books, I suddenly realised, I was like, yeah, I've got all these books and I'm reading them and I'm enjoying them. But then once they're done, really, they're just on the side for when people come around and they go, oh, you've read that. That's, and you're literally, it's just, that's just you with your cock out going, look, I've read all these. Chomsky, yeah, of course I have. You know, it's...
Yeah, of course I've read the blurb on the back. Yeah,
because... I've 3 pages in, I got it. I didn't need to read the rest.
Yeah, it's quite wordy. It's quite wordy. It's not one of those easy access books. It's not written for the, you know, for the man on the street.
There's nothing layman's about it.
But, you know, I'm going to get my degree and then I'll come back to it.
But all of that, books and things on the sides, kind of you just showing people when they come and go, this is my personality, this is who I am.
I also think they're a nice reminder of the, you know, of, because a book is such an intense thing to do, isn't it? It's like a whole world that you're in.
Yeah.
And it's like your little private world. And I like to keep them just so I can glance up and go, oh, yeah, that was a nice one. But a lot of the time with books, you don't remember half of it, do you? You don't remember 99% of a book. You can be absolutely engrossed in a book. It can be fiction or non-fiction, you know. It can be reference, it can be psychology, and you're like buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. And then you'll maybe pick up 3 lines that then you'll have a new opinion about something or useful that you can say about something. And then the rest of it's just gone. I'm just like,
yeah,
it just doesn't stick.
No,
wonder, what's the point? Just what's the point of fucking reading?
Well, I think it goes in somewhere.
Yeah.
It must change. It changes your vocabulary. And it, you know, it gives you the ideas and that. And I do know now, because last few years, I'd kind of been locked in a state of just sitting and thinking and mulling over shit that I've done in the past and how I can be better. And then I realised that I hated that feeling of feeling shit all the time, and that's what I was doing. I was trapped in that thing. But now I'm reading more. I'm actually going out and walking more and doing more things, thinking more, watching more things. And now I can feel my brain kind of kicking back into gear again. It feels like a rusty bike that's just had some WD-40 squirted on it, you know?
It's very nice. It's very soothing, isn't it, to read and to hear something new.
Yeah.
Or a new angle on something that you've had a different perspective on your whole life or for a long time, and just get that, wow, yeah, that's a different way of seeing it. And you almost like, it's such a lovely, lovely warm feeling of feeling your world shift.
Yeah.
And realizing that life isn't constant and you can always change, and that's a nice feeling. It's also nice to read things you already believe and go, yeah, yeah, that's locked in now. That's someone it, else yeah. has said it. So that's a fact. That's a fact.
That's it now. Good. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. My opinion. Solid. That's not going anywhere.
Until you speak to the next person, you go, actually, that's not a bad take on it. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way before.
Yeah, I really tell you what I find it annoying is, you know, when you're trying to get on the health tip and then someone will say, oh, you know what you need. And so you get on that. And then someone will say, oh, no, that only works if you take it with this. So you've got to then start source some fucking pineapple extract. Otherwise, the NAC doesn't go down properly. And just, your whole life is just a constant thing of people saying what you need and what you know how yeah. this system works and how the brain works. And oh, that pill's actually a placebo, so anything you feel on that is actually just your brain making it up. All right.
Oh, good. 4 years I was on that.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, fair play to my brain for making me come up every morning at 11 o'clock when I took the pill.
Do you know what I feel like sometimes? You know, like when you see in films, there's like a passageway and the person's running down it and there's all these hands coming out of it. You ever seen that in a film somewhere? I feel like that sometimes, walking through life, and it's just these hands just coming out going, you need this, you need that. Give me your money. Give me this. Give me that. And I'm just like, fucking hell. Can everyone just chill out a bit? Yeah, as I'm running down this, like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, there's every option you take comes with a... someone or something saying, oh, no, that's being discredited now.
Yes.
What you need is this. There's a new book which has actually discredited that whole school of psychology and approach to life. There's a new thing we're all doing.
And
it's all been debunked.
I remember watching, those fucking films. I can't remember what they're bloody called now. The Conjuring, that was it. The Conjuring, and they did one about the Enfield haunting. There's a famous house in Enfield, famous story, and there's tapes of it. You can hear what's going on, and the kids were getting flung around in their bedroom and things like that. And then it all got debunked. But I still, after watching the film of it, I still went there with my ex because I only lived up the road, so we went to the house. Even though we know it's been debunked,
yeah,
we were still standing outside the house going, that is a creepy fucking house, thinking that there were people like moving the curtains and looking, and we were just, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and we were shitting ourselves.
Well, the bunking had done its job on you already, so the debunking, debunking has got to debunk some, you know, some long-standing bunkage.
There's a lot of bunkage in there.
And a lot of bunkage is about believing it. And if you truly believe it, then debunking it doesn't mean anything.
I think you're right. It's easy to... We hang on to the bunkage, don't we? Even though someone will stay in front of you and go, that's not right, it's not true. We've actually proven... We've debunked it. And they go, yeah, but I was really comfortable with my bunk.
Yeah, yeah, it was the right fit for me. I didn't mind my feet dangling off the end. I'm having that now with meds. I'm taking Prozac, or I've stopped taking Prozac because people were saying it's a placebo. Oh, there's new studies that have shown, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, but it definitely changed my life. And I'm now sort of going, all right, so was that all an illusion? Was that all just...
But
is
people
my
have
brain,
been taking that for years, so it can't be.
Well, yeah, but it's saying there's new studies that show that it says... If you tell people that they're going to take something that is helping them and making them well or is supporting them, their brain will go, all right, cool. And but I don't know, man, because I've taken stuff that didn't work that I was hoping worked. And this definitely worked. It definitely worked, even though it's been debunked. Fuck your bunking, man. This is every morning I took this, and then I was on a constant sort of calm throughout the day. I was like, everything bounced off me. You know, when you're a little bit high, you've taken maybe a bit of MDMA or you smoked a joint.
Yeah,
which I don't do anymore because of the terrible doubts and voices.
Oh, but, dude, I know.
But that feeling of nothing can touch you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if people can say shit to you. Your life, you can have those stressful mornings, and you just go, "It's all right."
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm like, is this all my brain just making this up?
Well, we talked about it because we saw you the other week, and you said you've been having a moment where you were coming off of it, and you said you were coming off, you'd come off of it, and now you were just fucking, just annoyed at everything. So there must have been something in it. If you've gone from being completely calm, unless your brain is just so in tune with, I don't know, man. That's, That it must be something in there.
I definitely respond to whatever it is in MDMA. Like when I used to do MDMA, it was like a part of my brain, and I'm sure everyone has this on their drug of choice, is that there's a part of my brain that goes, yeah, this is the thing that's missing from every day. You know?
Yes.
I'll be out at a party and I'll be so chilled, so high, so happy, so well-intentioned, so well-meaning, so completely open to anything or anyone that I'm talking to or I'm around. To the point where you can be around, when you're on MDMA, you can be around like pretty aggressive people or even like menacing people. I remember hanging around with people who were in gangs and just talking to them, and they were really nice to me and they could tell that I was a safe place to talk, you know? And that I wasn't judgmental, and had these guy, this guy said, "Oh man, I've got a bit of a man crush on you." I was like, "Yeah, I'm not going to say anything, just in case you then have latent homophobia that you know you start smacking me." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I love you, but I hate you because I love you.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know I was gay. You fucking come here.
You fucking what?
You meet Stanley. But yeah, I was just aware. I was always aware that if I had a bit of this every day, then I would be like, life would be sweet. So when I was on Prozac, I was like, oh, this is the feeling I was chasing on the MD. This is the that feeling of just a kind of calm mood, being able to hold, you know, being able to feel comfortable in my own skin, to feel all right wherever I was, not to get overwhelmed socially, that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, there's definitely something in this that's in that drug as well.
I've realised now throughout my drug taking years, and it wasn't all the time, it just, there'd been phases of like, yeah, and then we didn't do it for ages. But I've realised now, when I was taking them, I've always managed to keep one hand on the ground. It didn't matter what I took, where I went, I've never really been totally obliterated. I was always managing to hang on. And because people have told me about their drug use, and they've told me what they've seen and what they've experienced. And I'm like, I don't think I ever did experience it to that level. I think because I was too busy trying to hang on, that I never really cut loose and let go, you know? And so I haven't really, I think MDMA was the one where I went, yeah, I could travel around on this. And do this. Yeah, yeah, this would be nice. Bounce around on this cloud. Yeah, like monkey on his cloud. Well, this is amazing. But I think growing up there was always something I needed. I was always on the move, always needed something. And so, of course, I started to, you know, you dabble in all manner of stuff, looking to fill that gap, trying to find that thing. Really, I think it's only now I'm older that I realise that you can't feel spectacular all the time. It's just not natural. You're going to have days. Like today, I'm in such a fucking shit mood. And I know, but you see, I can feel it right there, and I just want to fucking, I want to call someone a cunt, but I'm not going to, right? But that's because I'm tired, that's because I've rushed around this morning,
yeah.
I'll be all right later.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think as you get older, you do have more of a sense of calm and get your head around things, I think. It's a nice place.
I think you realise maybe that you've been here before. That's the good, you know, as you get older, you recognize a little moment you're in, or a spell you're in, or a bad patch, and you go, all right, I've been here before.
Yeah.
You kind of, even just the familiarity of it, it makes it less overwhelming, maybe.
There's that, yeah. And I think the things that are stressing me out, there's some stuff that I'm still dealing with, just financially. And at the end of the day, I just had, just now, whereas when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, fuck. Now I'm like, the worst that's going to happen. They can't take anything. I haven't got anything. They're not going to put me in prison. It's not that bad. There's not really much they can do. They're going to have to figure it out with me.
Yeah.
And you go, once you get your head around that, you go, yeah, they're going to have to figure it out.
Have you been putting the strip clubs through as staff welfare again, Rich?
$300,000 of sides. Where is it? $30,000, one of these sides. No, I haven't. I don't go to strip clubs. I had that conversation with somebody the other day. Never been my thing.
Debt collecting, yeah.
Yeah, the debt collectors came around. So what,
Mr. Wilson, well, I know we've spoken about this before, but these receipts.
400 quid on lube. I mean, Wilson. No, it's not my thing. But yeah, you know, you kind of get your head around stuff, don't you, as you get older? You kind of go, yeah, what's the worst that can happen?
I also think when you do get sad as you get older, it's also comes with an extra layer of, oh, fuck, this again. Which that's the flip side of getting older, is that you kind of spot the same old shite coming round if it does come back around and go, oh, I thought I'd done this. I thought this was done. And then you realise some of your memories and your pain is now 25, 30 years old, and it's like, it's fucking vintage, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, I'm still defined by some shit that happened in 1992. It's
and like, you're the only one that remembers that. You've archived it. No one else remembers.
Yeah, so it's in you, and you've kind of gone, all right, so I've done all this therapy and all this stuff, and I've, you know, got built a life that I'm really, is the life I want and need. And even then, there's this thing hanging around. And it's, that can be quite, that can add to the psychological element of it. That's almost like a director's commentary going on over the top. It's like, oh, wow, yeah, you haven't fixed this, have you? This is still there. So that, that's the flip side, I reckon.
Well, I think it's as well, when you have an unusual start in life, like my parents, you know, they weren't rich, but they weren't, we didn't have a lot of money, but it wasn't shit, and they did their best, and there's bits and bobs that could have been better, but, you know, that's the same everybody. But I think there's some people that when you have such an unusual start to life, then it's very difficult to kind of, to build what you want, because you have a weird sense of what reality is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, because I know you had an unusual sort of beginning, and that must have been hard to kind of get your head around and then go, right, you're sort of out the other side, you're right, where what happens now? How do I build on this?
Yeah, or how does any of this work?
Yeah,
you know, you come out into the world and go, right, how do you make friends? How does the basic mechanics of this work?
Yeah, that must have been frightening, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, I think, yeah, because it was religious, religious stuff coming at me from a young age. So yeah, I think that done in concentrated doses and with a kind of fervor is very anti-life. It's kind of designed to distance you from life.
Yeah.
To make you doubt your own instincts, impulses, desires, to sort of, to kind of look down on everyone else who isn't a Christian, see them as lost, sinful. So you're spending your childhood years trying to save people's souls, and that's not really good for banter when you're 10.
No, and that's not your job either. That's your,
no,
you're supposed
it's my
to be
dad's job. You fucking do it.
You fucking do it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. And it seems to me when in these religious things, especially extremes of anything, but extremes of religion, your sort of your life isn't yours. You're a servant to the God that you're.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
You're
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're all disposable. Really. You're on a mission. And I think life shouldn't be that for a kid. I think, you know, you need that time to experiment and to find yourself and to work out what your limits are, what your boundaries are, what your tastes are, who you are, what you want to do with your life. But if you're being told from a young age that essentially anything you want to do is really second, it's secondary to the bigger plan, and there's bigger stuff to worry about than what you want. You know, when you're 10, you want really nice trainers. That's one of the main things. You want the Nike Air Max, you know. You want the main thing. You want the Jordans.
What your mates have got, yeah.
You want to look cool. You want to have fun. You want to watch the movies that are out. But you're being told that it's materialism and sinful and worshipping false idols, and that the messaging in the movies and music you're watching and listening to is actually kind of perpetuating a sinful lifestyle, or has been sort of infiltrated by the devil. You know, you end up just going, all right, well, I can't, there's fuck all I can do really with joy. And that actually going to church wasn't fun either. You know, that's dry as hell when you're 10.
Yeah. I think that's the thing as well. If they made it fun, you'd kind of be more inclined. Like, look at gospel churches, look incredible. I can totally see why people go into that and get caught up in it, because it just, the energy and the vibe and the love in the room, it's just, it's next level. You go, yeah, of course. But then you've got Christianity and you know, other Catholicism, and it's all about punishment and silence, and you should just be devoted to your Lord, and you should be just sitting in the corner, staring at the wall, just praying and reading your Bible and all that. And you go, why? Why give me this? Why give me, if you gave me this precious thing called life, why have I got to do it staring at a wall just thinking about you, you arrogant piece of shit?
Yeah, it's not celebratory, is it?
No.
The Baptist thing that you're talking about, I particularly feel like in the African element of it really gets that as well. And when you see it in England, there is that joyful quality. Mm. And it's like, oh, you're celebrating Jesus, you're celebrating life, you're celebrating being saved, you're celebrating the earth, all the things that you would want if you think that you've been saved. Well, why aren't you dancing? Yeah. And then bring that joy to the world, because surely that's going to be more contagious and more compelling to people than some miserable fuck wearing a suit who's frowning at you and giving you a leaflet.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to go to that church? You'll only recruit people that are lost, sad, lonely. You won't recruit, you know, this, you could open up a whole world just by being the thing you want people to become.
Yeah.
It's very sullen, like the Christian church. There's a lot of kind of just duty bound, heavy hearted people just ticking the boxes of behavior rather than actually living the experience, living the love that they talk of. Jesus, you know, God is love. It's like, yeah, but you're miserable.
Yeah,
you're dry. You look like a raisin. You know what I mean? You just look like there's no. You look like deflated.
Yeah, you don't look like you're enjoying this at all, and you're taking it out on me.
Yeah,
you're going. You're not giving enough. You're not doing enough. And you're like, no, but you're. It's just you. You're just sad, and so I'm now. As you do, I remember being at secondary school, and I've said this before, everybody was getting bullied on different levels. So the bullies at the top were bullying, they were bullying, and then the bullies, people were getting bullied, were bullying other people. I got bullied, so I bullied someone else.
Mm.
It was awful, and that's because we were all miserable.
Mm.
And I think it's so unhealthy. I mean, believe what you want to believe, if that, you know, I'm not knocking that, but don't be a cunt about it. Jesus Christ.
I think it's when there's an evangelical element, because there is with Christianity, and there is with you see it now with social justice. There's a sense that they're on a mission. Sorry about the noise. I think someone's doing some drilling next door.
Right,
if
mate,
you're picking that
me.
Up, Paul some might be able to do some wizardry.
Sure,
but there's a sense that they're on a mission. They have a world that they need to save, and when that's the rhetoric, it does make it more invasive, because they've got to save the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a Christian, you believe that the world is lost and Jesus is going to come back, and those who aren't saved will go to hell. And that's a heavy thing to hold. And you see it with social justice people. They are trying to build to this beautiful world where everyone is represented and we're all equal and there's no injustice. And why would you doubt that? Why would you not want to do that? And here's the ways we can do it. And why aren't you willing? You're not willing to do it. And here's, you know, I'm offering you some guidelines on how to be a better person, to change the world, to build to this future. And you're not willing. And you can see that people get crazy, because they're like, they think they have the solution to this problem. And this is the way it needs to be done. And if you're against it, it puts their back up, or makes them crazy, or makes them sad, because they feel that you're basically saying, no, I don't think that's the world that we should have, or no, I'm not into that change. But it's actually just, they have a different way of doing things. They have a different way of building that world that they want.
Yeah. It must have been, when you were coming, when you're in it as well, you obviously, I mean, I don't know how it ended. Was it, did you make a choice, or did something happen and you came away from the church?
Gradually, just a restlessness between about 11 and 15, and then finally 15 I stopped. But yeah, it was a lot of arguing on Sunday morning, and my dad threatening me and trying everything, you know, threatening me with hell and you know, just anything he could, and telling me that I had to go because he was the grown up. And eventually, you know, you get 13, 14 and you can't really force a kid out of a building.
No.
Or into
and that's the thing. So you must have had, all the way along, you must have had that there's something more to this. There's something more than this. Do you know what I mean? That pushed you on to go, in the end, go, do you know what? Absolutely fuck this. I'm out.
And I think, I probably did. I probably did. Because when I was about 11, 12, I came off the tracks for a while. And I was just enjoying life for about, I don't know how long it was. In my head, it was a year, but I think it was probably only a few weeks. Because I was just ecstatic. I was swearing. I was swearing so much. I was like, all this energy was coming out of me that was just like repressed anger and just being able to express myself.
Yeah.
And I was funny and I could say the stuff I wanted to say. And I could banter and I could give it back if anyone was shit, you know?
Yeah.
Before, I had to swallow it, turn the other cheek, you know, not swear, not even have sinful thoughts. For about, I don't know, a few weeks, maybe a couple, few months, I was just me. You know, and I was just like, this is amazing. So I think it's like, you know, when they send, I think it's the church, is it the Mormon church or the Amish? They send you away for a year when you're
late
teens. You go away into the world for a year to see how the world lives. And then if you don't want to come back, you don't have to come back.
Yeah.
But it's a way to test that you're solid, that you're proper, and to give you that insight into what you have by seeing how other people live. But I think maybe those few months just gave me an insight into who I am. And then my dad got hold of me again with the fear and I got back into shape and was sort of doing the thing, but I don't think my heart was in it.
No.
I was just trying to avoid hell. And I don't think fear is enough to hold you for long once you've tasted how life can be. Mm. For me personally anyway, I think other people maybe fear does work long term, but I just felt so incredible those few months.
Yeah, I bet.
I think I probably had a glimpse there.
I think it's if you are one of those people that sort of mulls things over, thinks about it, instead of just accepting, like if someone telling, like we've already said before, like someone goes, this is how it is, and you go, okay. And then you go, well, this is heaven if you're good, and then it's hell if you're bad. You don't want to go to hell, that's woof. And then they really hammer home the hell bit. Then you just, oh my God. And so if you believe it, and you're in, then, you know, you know. But if you've got that in you where you kind of go, hang on a minute. So, I've just got to spend my life not, I'm worried about going down there, and there's only a chance I might go up there.
Yeah.
But I've got to worry about, I'm probably more likely to go there, so I've got to really worry about that.
Yeah.
But I, if I'm really good, I collect enough tokens, I might get to go there. But that's not guaranteed. So, but watch out. It's like if you start, when you start, you go, that doesn't make fucking sense.
Yeah.
None of this makes sense. And that's when the fear starts to go away. Do you know what? Yeah. I dilute a little. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it does make sense if it's what you're raised in, even if it doesn't make sense, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
That's the thing. You question it. And then they just say, oh, the Lord works in mysterious ways. That's the one that comes back at you.
Yeah.
And then also Bill Hicks has a great bit about this where there's built-in logic systems that keep it protected. So if you start to sound persuasive in your argument against it, people will say, oh, the devil's got hold of you.
Oh, yeah.
So if they find themselves going, oh, yeah, you got a point there. No, the devil's here.
Oh.
So the persuasiveness is the devil.
Yeah.
And questioning it is doubting it, but the Lord works in mysterious ways. So if there's any big blank in what seems to make sense about the dogma, where you go, hang on a sec, that seems a bit, oh, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Mm. He has a plan. We're not privy to his plans, you know, it's like, oh, brilliant. So I've just got a cognitive dissonance there, have I?
Yeah.
Just carry on, pretend that I didn't see the crack.
That's that leap of faith, isn't it? It's that kind of, okay, all right, well, I'm here now. I believe it. I'll just go. And whoever came up with that phrase, he moves in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
Must have had the rest of the day off. Because all of his little buddies just went, you fucking nailed that, mate.
You smashed it, mate.
Yeah, oh, there's no getting out of that.
That's going to keep the people down.
That'll keep the people down.
Yeah, that'll stop them fucking each other.
And while they're fucking each other behind doors. But this is the thing. This is the thing, isn't it? It's like all the people in charge tell you not to do this, that, and the other, whilst they're at it And you just, like the minute we're in this, you know, this cost of living crisis, and you're standing there in front of the members of parliament going, this is fucked. You need to start doing something about this. You know, need to start actually helping the people rather than talking about the economy and inflation and all these things. It's like, help the people, the economy will grow. If you do that, yeah, but and they go, yeah, but there isn't any money, but we can't really do that. As they're being handed handfuls of money and they're shoving it in their pockets as they're talking to you about there not being any money. And it's the same thing. Always the people in charge manipulate the people down the bottom. And it's human nature, isn't it?
I don't think they're empaths. I don't think you can be an empath if you come, if you're raised in privilege and then just ushered through to the next, you know, the next level of power. It's like, how can you possibly have any care? You know, how can you possibly really know what it's like to live and to have that 10 years where you're struggling away, you know, trying to make money and trying to, you know, get where you want to get in life? And I know they'll have their version, and there are honest politicians, but there's a hell of a lot of businessmen and women, essentially careerists.
Yeah.
People who just who want to reach the upper echelon of that job. It's not really about changing the world or reaching people or touching lives or soothing the pain of the everyman.
No, of course not.
You know, and it's like, if you've been through shit and you've had to, you know, work to get where you've got, and it's been hard, it just builds empathy, doesn't it? It just makes you appreciate what you have, and you don't talk down to people who service staff, and you just know, you know what I mean? It's just, so yeah, you're dealing with people who just haven't really got life experience.
Exactly,
pulling
that.
The strings.
Exactly, because they're just born into that life and they go, well, you're going to be doing this or this, so don't worry about it. And you know, we were watching, there's a TV show called You.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And we watched it last night, and there was a bit, they're in this big stately home and people are getting bumped off and this, that and the other. And Kate said, I just said, these people are fucking awful. And she said, yeah, but they're not real people. And I went, oh no, this is true. There's people like this that just don't give a shit. Like they'll send poor people off into the woods to hunt them. You know, I was getting on this mad, I don't have much of a chip on my shoulder, but I'm like, these people don't give a fuck about us.
Yeah.
They genuinely don't see us as people.
Yeah.
And, you know. And they're in charge.
And why would they? Why would they? You know, I don't know. It kind of breeds a certain type of sociopath, doesn't it? Politics. Mm. The ones that do well. It's an operation. It's a exercise in skill and sort of manipulation and using the right words at the right time and using, you know, good suits and a way of talking and you know, it's all kind of learned. We're just so desperate to hear someone that sounds like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We go, all right, well he seems better than the last one. You know, he sounds sure. And we go, all right, that's fine. And we just keep trusting it. I would have been really interested to know what would happen if Corbyn had got in.
Oh, God, yeah.
That would have been a real... That would have been... Would it have been different? Would he have changed?
Oh,
would he have been corrupted?
This is the thing, isn't it?
Would he have started a war? You'd be like, Jeremy, what are you doing?
Jez, mate, what happened?
Mate.
He comes walking in with like this, this mad, expensive Armani tracksuit. He's banging around. Oh my God, he's gone completely the other way. This is awful. I think it does seem to be when people get a bit of power in our industry as well. It seems to be that people, when they get up to a certain level, they do get a bit corrupted by it. I think in all walks of life, when you get to a level of, say, importance, you get a bit up yourself, and you do start to do things, and then you get that buzz of, I can't let this go, I need this now. And so you go all out, and I'm not saying this is everybody, this is one or two people, but you kind of, that fight, then they start to fight to keep hold of the power that they've got.
And then they just
become so incensed and like, I must have this at all costs. And
yes,
and that's when it gets shit.
Yeah. They're hooked into the lifestyle or the status.
The status, yes.
And that's it. Now they want that. That's the drug that they're getting their biggest hit from.
Yeah.
So they just, yeah, that's very true. I think luckily I have enough erraticness in my mental health to that keeps me humble, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I'm only a day away from my own system calling me a piece of shit, so it doesn't really touch the sides. If any success is like, okay, great, I've done that show now, and then a week later, you're a sack of piss, you know what I mean? Look at you, what are you doing, still living a house share? It's like, there's always something, isn't there? There's always I've never coasted to that next level when it comes to this job of feeling kind of I don't think it would sit well with me. And I think if you want to go into the mainstream, I think you have to be able to sort of live in that weird world of the artificial. And you watch primetime TV and you see the guys going through and you're like, okay, great, but you're in this kind of glossy world with studio audiences, which I hate and I can't bear. And a lot of the time I've done TV, I've really cringed at how contrived it is when you're in it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, okay, we're going to do that one again. And Tom, can we get you to repeat that line? And can we get you to react to something that's just happened, but it hasn't happened yet? We're going to use it later. So I'm like, I'm having to react to something that hasn't happened yet that they're going to cut into the edit. And all right, we're going to get that walk on again and roll the dry ice. You know, all that stuff is like, oh, I don't know. This is not really what I enjoy. But
no.
If you can live with all that, the gloss and the basic fact that it's a product that's being sold to people sitting on their asses at home going, well, this is entertaining. If you can live with that and you can wear the suit and you can do your persona on tap, then you can have great success. But I think I'm really bad at all of those things. And I'm not saying, oh, I'm really real. I'm just saying I can't keep up a performance that's very consistent.
Yeah.
So if I have to be primetime gloss, I think I'd probably start being a bit shitty after episode one.
Right.
Start saying things that reveal my actual opinions about the structure of power and the nature of fame and, you know, this sort of dumb entertainment that people bloat out on and waste their lives watching. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't help it.
It's yes, I know what you mean. I mean, I see it as, because I used to be the same, and now I'm like, do you know what? You know, you can do these things, and if you do all right on them, then that means at some point you'll get to do the things you really want to do.
Yeah.
But you have to get into the spotlight first, not the spotlight, but you have to get on a level. So then people go, right, okay, what have you got any ideas? And you go, actually, yes, I do. I have these ideas.
Yes. Yeah, because you're doing X Factor, aren't you?
I will talk about that off this. I've been told
okay.
not to.
All right. Cool.
I got told off. Not by them, but by someone else. Because I'm like, I've got ideas. And I'm like, you go, give me a little bit of I just need my profile raised a bit, and then I'll be able to do these things I want to do.
And that's it.
And I think that's it. We are very much, yes, ambition is a good thing, but I think if ambition keeps making you look away from where you are to the next thing, instead of giving you a moment to go, do you know what? Actually, I'm doing all right. This is nice, actually. I've got, at the minute, it's a shit day today, but I'll be all right later. But I'm having a nice time. I've got a lovely, beautiful wife. She's very funny. I've got lovely friends around me. I'm all right. So I've got to keep looking at that and go, yeah, that's right. And there's things that are coming along and I'm like, oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who's done that thing where I'm like, oh, fuck, why am I not doing that? Why am I not there? And that just hurts you.
Mm.
You're just getting in your own way. And you give that energy off into the universe, and then people are like, oh, he's a bit off.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's something about him, and they don't want to work with you, or I don't want to do things with you.
Yeah.
So I think trying to find that kind of an inner peace, which sounds, I know that sounds wank, but...
No, that's really true, because it's the ambition becoming the drive.
Yeah.
Is completely, it's like it's missing the point almost, isn't it? It's like ambition is part of the drive.
Yeah.
You have the things you want to do, but as you say, if the ambition itself becomes the driving force of all of it, then you're kind of caught in this, in the coldest element of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, taking stock and being appreciative is really important. And it's ideally you're aligning, accepting where you are in your life and what your progress is.
Yeah.
You know, with your ambition, sort of aligning the two together. But that's why social media is so dangerous, because as you say, glance down,
yep,
you've fucked off for about a week. Someone's grinning face holding up some trophy or smirking with some celebrity that they're, you know, asked for a picture with. And it's like, it just puts you in a bad mood, doesn't it? And you're like, and then it makes you doubt your own progress. You think, oh, fuck. You know, yeah. Then you sort of think you have to sort of paddle faster and work harder. And it's like, no, you've got your pacing. You've got your way of doing things.
Exactly. And yeah.
You are where you need to be, my mate Alan says. This moment is perfect. You are always exactly where you need to be.
This is the thing when people say, do you like regrets and things like that? They go, yeah, I look back and there's people I've upset. But I just had to make a decision, and unfortunately that decision upset a couple of people, and I'm like, you know, but that's, I wasn't being a cunt, I just needed to make those decisions. There's going to be people in your past that you've upset, hopefully they'll get, later on, after everything sort of settled down, they go, all right, I get it. Well, yeah. They upset me, but I get it. Wasn't as bad as all that, but, you know, I think you have to just, yeah, like you say, take stock. Don't let the ambition become the drive, because then you're on a runaway train that you'll never be able to stop, and then suddenly you're in the fucking ditches.
Yeah.
I think,
and capitalism wins in that, you know, it's like you're just caught in that system of status. Yeah. And if it does come crashing down, you know, it's extremely painful to suddenly face yourself and have no self-respect that isn't derived from success or from what your last project was.
Yeah.
You know, if your whole sense of self is based on your profile or your size of your house, it's a very vulnerable place to be.
Yeah.
And people like that are incredibly boring to hang around with, because they don't really want to have a chat, because that's too dangerous. They can't afford to start dismantling it because they believe in it.
Yes.
You know, you hang around with materialists, pure materialists. It's just so boring. It's just like, why are you so obsessed with all this shit?
Yeah, I've got the latest telly, I've got the latest this, I've got the latest that. And you're like, yeah, but why?
But also your neighbour has exactly the same stuff. Is this about the stuff, or is it about making sure that you have the same stuff as your neighbour so they know you're doing all right? It's like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Status.
You're so caught in a particular version of it. It's like, mate, just fucking drop it. Let some people think you're a loser. It's all right. I quite enjoy people thinking I'm a loser. It's fun to play with.
Yeah.
Because I look like, sometimes I go up to people and ask them for directions because they don't have a smartphone, or ask them the time, which actually I've got a phone with the time on it. So that's very rare. Excuse me, do you have the time? Do you have a light for my pipe? But yeah, just people look at me as if I'm homeless, and I can see they can't work out whether I'm homeless or whether I'm just a bit scruffy.
A
moment I see that flicker of, what is this guy? What does he want?
Yeah.
And
what's
then
he
they,
about?
Yeah. And then they hear my grammar school education voice and they go, oh, well, no, he's fine. We'll give him directions.
He's eccentric.
Yes. He's just unkempt, but there's probably some land in the family. Yes. You head up there to the left and, but yeah. It's fun to, I've quite enjoyed playing with that, or well, not playing with it, but just seeing how people think I'm a loser. I remember when I started doing comedy, you know, people would make comments and, oh, you're doing comedy, or, you know, when you hit 30, oh, you're getting on. It's like, you have to be prepared to be a bit of a scumbag in comedy for a while, you know,
yeah,
by other people's standards.
I think, yeah. And I think again, with age, I'm at a point now where I care less about what people think. I think I'm in a good place where I'm like, hey, do you know what? I know I could be a bit of a dick sometimes, but I'm actually fundamentally pretty cool. I'm all right. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I got a nice sense. It's not overly confident, but it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Where I can kind of see where other people are at. I go, yeah, because I've been there. So I can see why people are saying certain things, why they're behaving in a certain way. I go, yeah, you're just upset and you're insecure because of this, that and the other. Mm. And I say that from someone that's been there.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm like, and like getting upset because someone else that I think is a piece of shit is doing well. Usher.
Yeah.
That's what fucked me off today. Yeah. I'm like, I know you're a piece of shit. Everyone else knows you're a piece of shit, but look at you. And I know that that person would be really happy that knowing that I was upset about it.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Yeah.
It's up and down, it fluctuates. One minute I'm confident. Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Next minute, you're a piece of... Yeah.
Imagine getting to a point where you can scroll through social media homepages and not be emotionally thrown off by other people's lives. That's the dream, isn't it?
It is the dream.
That's the true test. That and going to see your mum and staying calm, I think. You know, when you go and see your mum, that's a real test. There's that line about if you think you're enlightened, go and spend the weekend with your mum. You know, that thing where people go down the meditation and yoga and then they think, yeah, 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 I'm really transcending. And then you go and hang out with your mum then.
Yeah.
But yeah, scroll through the home pages, hang out with your mum. Let's see how much you've really changed. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, this is all just lovely words.
Lovely words.
Yeah.
But now you're well out of where you were. You have built a life for yourself, a successful life. Let's be honest. You've done, I don't mean to sound patronizing in any way, shape or form, but you've experienced, compared to a lot of people, yours has been an extraordinary life. From where you started out to where you are now, you're not where you want to be right now, but you're in a better place than you were.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm only not in the place I want to be right now because I've come off the medication and I'm having to renegotiate my real feelings for good and for bad, and it's messy. And the pills took away the sharp, you know, the rough edges of that and gave me a consistency which is now not there. So yeah, but in general, I'm very happy with where my life is. I'm on tour for the first time. I've done some great shows. I just adore comedy. It's the only job I could do. It's the perfect thing for me. And it's being on my own, and I need that, and I need not to have a boss, and I need to be able to have my ups and downs and it not, imagine, you know, with our moods, And our stuff going into an office every day, we'd fall out with everyone.
Yeah, my desk would be upside down by lunchtime. You're like, what?
He's on Mock the Week, that fucking bastard. I'm not even a comedian, but even I know he's a wanker.
But you know what? This is the danger with medication, and some people absolutely need it because they're chemistry is so out of whack for whatever reason, but you know, and we all fluctuate, but I think that's the thing, life is abrasive and it's got edges and sharp bits, and I think people now, this like now they'll say, oh, I'm a bit, I don't like to go to certain social situations because it makes me anxious, my anxiety, and you go, yeah, that's life.
Yeah.
You're going to experience uncomfortable things. You can't have it smooth and not jagged. It's not going to be good for you.
Yeah.
You're never going to do anything. You're never going to go anywhere. The fear for me, I quite like being in situations now where I go, this is new. This is awful, but I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
The sense of achievement once I've got through it, because I'm quite shy fundamentally. I've said this to loads of people. So when I go, this is why I was drinking too much. I was having a couple of pints and then I was like, yeah, now I'm here. But then I'm like 2 pints in, I've got the sweets, but I'm like, fucking, let's have more pints. So it was getting out of hand. But you need fear and you need jagged bits. You just need them. Otherwise, because then when it gets calm for a bit and it's nice, you're not going to experience that.
Yeah,
it's everything's just the right. It's just in the middle, doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah, feeling nice, but essentially, it's like you're having your rent paid, isn't it? Someone's paying your rent. It kind of it takes something away from reality, which is important for the full picture.
I think so.
I think you're right. I think there is this kind of sense that we must avoid all of our bad feelings or the harder feelings and only do the things that make us feel comfortable all the time. And you do lose out on basically a lot of pain. And pain is the thing that makes us bigger, I think.
It does. Like, you know,
like
stronger.
Makes you more sensitive as well to other people and yourself, and you become more compassionate and more aware once you've gone through suffering.
I know, and that's the thing, you know, I don't want people to suffer, but at the same time, I feel we're becoming far too self-involved.
Mm.
when I listen to people, it's all about what they want to feel, how they want to feel. And you're like,
yeah, man.
All right, cool. But what about everybody else? Like, yeah. I hear like a lot of comedians now, a lot of newer comedians, and it's just, it's like 20 minutes of like, you haven't spoken about anything that affects anyone else.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, which is why I kind of, you know, when I was always worried about getting older, but now I'm just like, I'm not really, I don't really take people seriously. I do respect people and love people who are young, but I find it hard to take them fully seriously until they've been smashed about by life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, if you haven't had a heartbreak or a death in the family, or if you're not financially independent, then I can't really take you seriously. And I can respect you and treat you as you know, treat you nicely and be with you, but I just feel like you aren't an adult. You aren't an adult until you are on your own two feet, have navigated these things, appreciate how lucky you are, and don't take things, what's the expression, narcissistic injury.
Yeah, right. You know,
taking everything personally when something bad happens. Why is this happening to me? And it's like, it's not happening to you. It's happening, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just taking a weird kind of, taking it personally.
Yeah.
And that narcissistic injury thing I associate with quite young or just very privileged people who are just always, you know, as you say, just always talking about their own thing and their own experience and their own emotional landscape as if it's fucking fascinating to everyone else.
And it's just, do you know what, I do remember when I was younger and I was, you know, I was probably in the same place where I was a bit, I was very self-involved when I was growing up. I know, I, because you are, you're young,
we
and you're just
we
like,
are,
I,
yeah.
I want this and why have I not got that? And and you think you're the most important, you're the thing, you think you're the main character in everything. And then I know a few, talking to a few older people when I was young, and then they went, come and see me when you're 40, come and see me when you're 50. And then now you go, I get it now.
Yeah,
absolutely. You go, I didn't have a fucking clue.
Yeah. And I think you also, when you're acting out, that's also a thing. That thing of, if you're doing anything for effect, like we were talking about status a minute ago and how people's ambition is literally all the thing, is the drive. But if you're doing stuff for effect for other people,
yes,
that's also a thing, isn't it? It's like, that's not really living, is it? That's not, not living. It's just, you're not really, the reasoning, the intention behind what you're doing is flimsy.
Yeah.
And dependent on external forces.
Yes, that's why I was doing it. Yeah, I was just doing it. I wanted to be portrayed in a certain way. I wanted people to see me as whatever they. I can't remember. You know, I wanted them to see me as a cool dude. As a when I was younger, I wanted to think I was a tough guy. You know, I wanted people to see me in a certain way. I was portraying myself in certain ways so that people go, "Oh, he's a cool dude. He's this. He's that."
Yeah, yeah.
And it was always for other people, as you've just said. Always. Yeah.
But I think you need to do that in order to go, it's almost like you need to do all these phases. There's just no way around it. You've got to go through it. You've got to go through the various facades.
Yeah.
Just to face them and see what they're like. You know, because we're raised with them, aren't we? Films and TV and just products. Everything's a product being presented to us. And we go, that's exciting and dazzling. And we get hooked into it and then we want it. And then we have to do it in order to realize what's real and what's junk.
Yes.
Otherwise, we won't learn. And then the problem with religion is that you tell people to transcend things before they've even experienced them. So they can't know for themselves how hollow those things are. They have to just be told to avoid this because it's junk. But you've got a curiosity. You need to go through it first to discover for yourself its value or its worth.
Yeah, absolutely that. And that's where all the problems stem from. If someone says to you, don't do that, don't experience that, that's a bad thing. But if you've just nailed it. You went, you know, yeah, but if you've got a curiosity about things, you're going to start looking. And then you're going to be in a weird position where you're trusting the adults that are supposedly, that have your best interests at heart. But then there's this world where they're going, yeah, but that's terrible. And you're like, yeah, but Is it though? Is it really?
Yeah, but also they've done the fucking stuff themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
They did it when they were younger, before they converted, or when they went off the rails when they were young. And they're trying to shoehorn, they're trying to like project their experience onto you. Well, I've done it, trust me, darling. This is very bad. I had lots of sex all through my 20s. I had some brilliant times, but now I realise it was a sin.
And it's I like, don't
oh, what
have I
done,
yeah.
Dad? Yeah. So you had a good time in the 70s. Why can't I have a good time in the 90s?
Yeah. Exactly, you piece of shit. Let me go banging around. You did it. I want
exactly.
It's that hypocrisy, isn't it? It is that. It's exactly that. And oh, yeah. I think that's just that's just humans as well, and we'll evolve. But that stuff seems to just be ever present, you know. And I don't. I didn't think. I don't want to be down on human beings. I'm trying to. I'm actually like it is a. It is an amazing thing that we exist in the first place. I was thinking about on the way into work.
It's a head fuck, though, isn't it?
It is a head fuck.
Existing.
I was driving around like, what the yeah? Is this just it? It's just really,
what the fuck are we here for?
Fuck is the point? I think that's it. I think that's the thing, because human beings always thought we were the centre of the universe and important, and we're not. We don't even like Tommy Tiernan had this great bit about. He goes, you went to the planetarium, and then there was us, and then it came out, and then it was all our galaxy and Milky Way and whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then you come out again, there's all these other galaxies, and it comes out again, galaxies, and this other thing goes, it's so infinitely massive.
Mm.
And he goes, no, far from being the centre of everything, he goes, no one knows we're here. Because it's so tiny, and I think there is that human beings that are like, we're so important. You go, no, we're not. We're part of a moment in time.
Mm.
And then one day the planet will shift again and we'll be gone, but there'll be whatever else is running around. Willow the Wisp.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see what comes after us. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
I wonder what it would be. Would it just be like light?
Or one of the other animals will rise up and take over. The monkeys will come to land.
Daddy Longlegs will finally get his moment.
Striding around.
This is my time. So what happens now, Tom? You've got, how are you dealing with the changes in you with these? Now you're coming off your medication. Have they explained to you that there's a time where it's just like coming out of your system?
I've read up about it and watched a few YouTube videos and talked to my shrink about it, but it does take months. Yeah. I think, I've started taking cybercilin, the mushroom. That's been
helping. Well, you microdosing.
Twice a day. But I think you're supposed to stop after 5 days for 2 days, but I've forgot and I've done it for 9 days and I was feeling a bit washed out yesterday. I was like, why do I feel like I've just come back from a festival? I've been microdosing on that, and just getting used to the awkwardness of life and how easily irritated I am, and it's a fiddly one, but I'm up for it. It's tricky with a relationship though, because I've been seeing someone and she's got used to me in a certain way.
Then
if you stop taking the pills, you're a different person, which means they experience you as a different person, and then the whole relationship is different. Well, it feels that way, though it may not be that way for her, but it's definitely causing me some, like, because normally off the drugs, I find it hard to be in a relationship, and that was why it was so good. I'm like, okay, shit, I really don't want to lose this person, you know, but I am struggling with my own moods being so up and down, and then having to do that in close contact with someone else, you know, it's very immediate, isn't it, your relationship? It's like having a bloody mirror following you around everywhere you go. So you see, you know, you can't avoid yourself. And with friends and family, you can avoid. You can sort of not speak to them for a week or two. But girlfriends don't take that too well.
No. I think we are able now to be more vocal about how we're feeling at any given time, rather than, and it can be clumsy. I've said this on here before. But just to blurt out one day, to just go, do you know what? I don't know why I'm feeling, I feel like this, and I don't know why. Can you help? Or can I just have a minute? Like, maybe not to say it as aggressively as that, but do you know what I mean? Just to be able to, I do it all the time now. I just go, do you know what? I'll be stood by the sink. I go, I just don't know why I feel so aggy. Or I just feel odd. And then we talk about it. And she's like, and then we go back and go, well, maybe it's because that happened last night, or you had it's something to eat that's disagree with you, or you know, you had that wine last night or whatever. But I am, and it's always clumsy. Kate does it as well. She says, I just feel a bit sad. You know, all right, well, what's happening? And then we figure it out. And I think communication is important, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, hey, babe, can we have a chat for a bit? It can just be, I feel fucking weird.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
you know, you've got to work from that, really.
Yeah, yeah, be messy with it rather than feel like you've got to make sense.
Yeah, exactly that. I think that's where we're trying to stay in the framework and go, right, if she's having a really good day, I don't want to, and just go, you could just go, oh, you're having a great day. I just feel a bit weird. I'm just feeling a bit off. I don't really know why.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin your day. I'm just telling you. So if I seem a bit odd, it's because I feel odd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which is definitely better than just being odd.
Yeah.
And then
going, I'm fine.
And then hoping that they just get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shouldn't you know? Can't you see that something's up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want you to tell me what it is.
Yeah. Come and find me and make it better. I don't want to have to tell you if I'm feeling bad. You should be able to tell from the angle of my eyebrows.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it? We always want the other person to guess.
Yeah.
And it's just never going to be right.
I'm over here when you're ready to guess what's wrong.
But Tom, you're going to be all right. I know you will.
Oh, yeah? Can you guarantee that?
Absolutely. I can. Yeah.
Well, we've got it on recording now, so if I turn out fucked, I'll be like, Rich, I want my money back.
I didn't know he was going to shoot all those people in the shopping centre.
He said it doesn't matter what I do, that I'll be all right, and that he loves me. Rich said it.
up the car park. And I'll be at the bottom. I'll be like, Tom, come on, mate. It's going to be fine. Honestly, mate, you'll be fine. I think you're one of those people that, medication did make you feel a certain way, kept you kind of level. But I just think you're one of those people that it's just more interesting when you're not, when you're experiencing those shitty bits. You know, I know. I did antidepressants briefly, and it just made me feel. Didn't make me feel. It was just foggy and nothing. Mm. You know, which is what if that's what you're into, anyone listening, then that's. I'm not knocking that, but me personally, just sometimes I like to feel stuff.
Yeah, you're not a foggy guy.
No,
it's not your brand.
No, man. Nothing foggy about old Wilson. Anyway, you're going on tour, Tom. You're on tour?
I'm on tour, yeah.
Whereabouts? All over?
All over.
Find the deets.
Coming back to London in May. We've got six more. I don't know when this is going to go out, so we could do multiple takes. We've got five more. we've got four more. The tour's finished now, actually. But I'll be back on tour. Yeah, we're up till June 2023. Okay. And you can get it all on Tom Ward Comedian on my Instagram.
Lovely. It's been great, Tom. I'm glad we did this.
Me too.
Talked about it for a while.
Me too.
And
I was nervous.
No, man. This is the thing that people misunderstand. Not the same. That's what you did, but because it's mental health is the jumping off point. People think that it's going to be high pressure, and they've got it. It's like the thing about talking about your mental health or talking about mental health is it doesn't have to be actually about mental health. You talk about things you've dealt with and gone through or are going through, how you're dealing with it. And that is how we get people just need to know that they're not alone. I say this a lot on here. People, because we get this thing in our head where the thing we're experiencing is just us, like we talked about earlier, when really, we pretty much all of us feel the same way, different times. And that's why these conversations are important, just so people don't feel alone.
Yeah.
And they go, okay. They don't want someone to suffer, but they go, oh, that's someone else going through that. Oh, that makes me feel better. And that's why we do this. And that's what it's all about. And as I said to you before, Tom, the door is always open when you want to come back, mate, if you want to have another chat. It's later on. See how you get on.
I'll call you from, maybe we can do it from prison.
Do it from prison, yeah. Oh, we've not done that yet.
Yeah, the follow-up interview when you've told someone everything's going to be fine and they've taken it the wrong way.
That's it, yeah. And you've got cornrows and you're all like Will Ferrell.
And a neck tattoo. And a little teardrop.
You're the king of the bout of the you're the king of your war, your whatever it is. I've never been to prison, so I don't know.
Of the wing. Like, the yeah, wing. Like, oh, Rich. Oh, that's Rich Wilson. That's my boy. He said he told me to do it, actually. Yeah. He's my boy. He's all right, he is. Yeah. He's a good lad.
I'm still getting my friends to drop dog shit through his letterbox, but he's a good boy. Tom, this has been great. Thank you so much, mate.
Thanks, Rich.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.